postpartum body odor. It is a totally natural phenomenon because your body chemistry changes after giving birth. And so sometimes that means that what worked before is no longer effective. But I am excited to say that now there is a solution for that stubborn odor. The Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is a completely natural deodorant made by a postpartum mom who went through it herself. And it works by eliminating and preventing bacterial body odor without covering up your skin's comforting smell to your baby while giving you 12 hours of odor control. And let me tell you, it actually works. Here at the house, we've all been trying it and loving it. Now, before you think, ew, you're sharing a deodorant with your husband and daughter, let me explain that this full body deodorant comes in a convenient pump applicator that lets you apply it anywhere on your body with no bacteria traveling on the deodorant, so no ew involved. We also love that the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant has a delightful natural scent of USDA certified organic extracts that smell like a pink sugar cookie with lemon frosting. I thought this would be a little strange, but it's actually amazing. Also, the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is free from artificial fragrances and any kind of senoestrogens or herbs that can interfere with breastfeeding. Find your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant at postpartumdeodorant.com. That's postpartumdeodorant.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 20% off through the month of May. Get your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant now at postpartumdeodorant.com and start smelling more like yourself again. Now that we're in full spring mode, I am constantly reaching for my Jenny Kane Crop Cashmere Cocoon Cardigan because I find it is the perfect level of warm and cozy for when there's still a light chill in the air, but I don't want a coat. And like so many of Jenny Kane's bestsellers, this 100% cashmere cardigan is just so versatile. So I can wear it on its own over dresses, short sleeves, long sleeves, with slacks or jeans. It works with all of it, which is a really good thing because I just never want to take it off. And of course, this cardigan has the impeccable and luxurious level of craftsmanship that you can expect from all of Jenny Kane's products. Jenny Kane is a California brand through and through, and so think minimalist and effortless, but totally refined. Because they are a sponsor of the podcast, for a limited time, our listeners can get 15% off their first order while supporting our show. Go to jennykane.com and use the code BIRTHFUL15 to get 15% off. Now, I know that I go on and on about Jenny Kane sweaters because I'm frankly obsessed, but they also have everything you could want to finish out your look. They have dresses, shoes, and even a stunning collection of home essentials. Curate a wardrobe that never goes out of style at jennykane.com. As a Birthful listener, get 15% off your first order when you use the code BIRTHFUL15 at checkout. That's 15% off your first order at jennykane.com, promo code BIRTHFUL15. Let getting dressed be one less thing to worry about. Welcome to Birthful Mighty Parent or Parent-to-Be. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today we've got not one, not two or three, but four birth stories courtesy of Megan Othling, and this episode is part of our Birth Beyond the Clinical Experience series. Megan is a fabulous birth professional who works as a birth doula, an Ayurvedic postpartum doula, a childbirth educator, and prenatal and postpartum exercise specialist. Megan is also a writer, and she lives in Albuquerque, New Mexico with her husband, four children, two dogs, a rabbit, a snake, and a gecko. Now, during our conversation, it was just so profound to hear Megan explain how birth can happen as much in your head as in your body, and how facing the unexpected feelings she was having for her child was exactly what was needed in order for them to be born. Now, the feelings that were coming up for Megan were not easy and really not the most popular ones, But her willingness to not only voice them, but work on not judging herself for having them, and really just stepping into the vulnerability of accepting that in herself, while also sharing what she was feeling with her team, I mean, that is some intense work toward exploring the intimate nature of birth that Nicole Shapiro talked about during her episode that is also a part of this series of our Birth Beyond the Clinical Experience series. There is so much growth and transformation through these four stories, and so many good takeaways, not just for birth, but also for the postpartum period, that you might just want to listen to this episode more than once. Now, a couple of things before we jump in. The first is that during our conversation, there is a mention of miscarriage. We don't go into the details, but it is mentioned. And the second is that since we're doing four birth stories, this episode is a little bit longer than usual, but so worth it. All right, you're listening to Birthful, here to inform your intuition. Megan, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So let's think back to, you know, when you were pregnant with your first. What were your feelings and thought about birth then? What did you know and what were your wishes for that, right, for that labor and birth?
I feel like I knew maybe more than the average person with their first child. My sister had, well, she was pregnant with her fourth also, my older sister, and she had had all of them naturally or unmedicated, and my mom had had all four of us unmedicated. Well, actually three, because the first was born in 1979 and they just didn't ask you what you wanted at that time. Mm-hmm. So I knew that I could do it. There wasn't as much fear as I think a lot of people have going into it. There was a lot of confidence in a woman's body and the design of it and how, yeah, we're made to birth babies, and there's not really a lot to be afraid of.
Mm-hmm. You had a great role models and people around you to look up to, that framework.
Yeah. So that's a really big gift, I think, to not have a lot of baggage.
Huge.
To come in with. So, yeah. And also when I was a kid, I wanted to be a midwife since I was probably like 10. And then I realized all the schooling that would go into it and thought maybe I'm not that scientifically minded. So doula's kind of the next best thing, I guess, for me.
How cool that you always knew that you wanted to do something like this.
Yeah. So I've always been interested in birth and fascinated by it and the development of babies and all of that. So it wasn't like I was just jumping into it when I got pregnant.
So yeah. Then you had that in mind of having, you know, a natural vaginal birth or a non-medicated vaginal birth at the hospital. And did you do anything during pregnancy specifically to prepare?
I'm a little embarrassed. I didn't really do a lot to prepare, because besides, you know, talking to my sister and my mom, and I was one of the first of my group of friends to have a baby. So that was my pool, was my mom and my sister. So just a lot of talking about it. Yeah, I'm a dancer, so I've danced since I was little, and I kept dancing about halfway through my pregnancy. So that probably helped. I was staying active physically. And the rest of it, I just figured I would know what to do. My body would know what to do. So mm-hmm. I didn't take any classes or anything, so.
Well, and like you said, you didn't have those internal fears and that baggage to try to sort of balance out. You were already in a happy birthplace, if you will.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So then how did you know you were in labor?
My water broke. It was a nice, good sign, a solid sign. Yeah, I had zero contractions. And then my water broke in the middle of the night. I just rolled over and, you know, you felt that pop and then water. Mm-hmm. So I said to my husband, I think that my water broke. And we got up and changed the sheets, and contractions started pretty much right away after that. And I called the midwife call line, and they said, you know, it's your first baby and it can take a while. Go back to bed and call us in the morning. And so I tried to do that, and contractions just kept going and kind of intensifying. So I think it was, I'm just guessing that was around 2 in the morning. And then they were probably about 5 minutes apart by 4. And so we headed to the hospital at about 4 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. So that did move rather quickly.
Yeah, it did. So I did the whole triage thing where they hook you up and they say it's for 20 minutes and it's always longer than that.
Oh my goodness. I always say that, you know, a short triage is 45 minutes.
So I was probably an hour and a half. We called my mom and she came. She's been there for all of my kids, just my mom and my husband and I. That's our plan. They were monitoring my contractions. In hindsight, I know they never stay right on schedule. Sometimes they'll go 3 to 5 to 7 minutes apart, but I still know that it's happening. So,
did they check you at that point? How far along were you?
Yeah, they checked me. I think I was just at 4. So, yeah, we were in triage. I remember my mom had bought me a necklace for labor, and she was trying to put it on me in the middle of a contraction, and I was just like, no, no, stop. So that was the first, like, laboring woman intense thing that I did, which was like hit her away. So once we were out of triage, I got in the birth tub right away at the hospital where I delivered my first 3. They have birth tubs in every labor room, which is pretty awesome. You're not allowed to give birth in the tub, but you're allowed to labor in there. So I just got in there right away, and I'm pretty sure that that's where I was for the whole time, except for, you know, when they had to get me out to do the intermittent monitoring.
Interesting. You had to get out of the tub for the intermittent monitoring?
At that point, I did. With later births, they did have like a mobile thing that and a waterproof that they strapped on. But I guess they didn't have it at that time. You see, when you have a bunch of babies in a short period of time, how things progress kind of quickly.
Right. Changes in technology and policies. Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Yeah.
So, yeah, it was basically just me and my husband in the bathroom where the tub was for most of the time. A midwife would come in and check on me every once in a while. A nurse would come in and, you know, they do the vitals and the checking every once in a while, but pretty much no one bothered us, which was pretty nice. I didn't have a written out birth plan or anything, but I knew what I wanted. I had it in my head. And so they asked in triage what my plan was for medication. And I said, don't offer me anything. And they didn't, not once. So that's a pretty great thing.
Yeah, they respected your wishes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it was pretty much a blur for my first one. And it was 8 hours start to finish. So it was pretty quick for a first birth. So we hung out in the birth tub for most of the time. And I would sleep between contractions and just drift off and then wake up in it. I was sitting there with my husband. I did hear my mom say from the other room, she was telling, I don't know if it was a nurse or a midwife, but she said, I have bled with each of my 4 births. She hemorrhaged after each one. My sister had hemorrhaged after each of her 4 births. And so she was just letting them know, you know, it seems to be a thing that we do in our family. And whoever she was talking to said, oh, well, you know, that's usually not a genetic thing, so we don't have to worry about it. It turns out it is. I have had that problem with all 4.
With all 4?
Yeah. Or I would have with my second, but they were very active in the third stage.
Okay.
So that was just a little foreshadowing that I heard her talk about that. And then I heard them basically dismiss it because it usually isn't. It usually doesn't have anything to do with genetics or,
mm-hmm.
but that's just how we are in my family. We don't bleed in other situations. So we're not like hemophiliacs. We just only bleed a lot when we have babies. Yeah. So I got out of the tub so they could check my cervix a couple of times. And when I was complete, they said that I could push.
Did you feel like pushing?
I didn't. No. Which now in hindsight, I know like I should have waited until I felt like pushing, but I didn't take a class. So that's something I could have learned. So I got up on the bed and I tried to push in on hands and knees. But every time I would have a contraction, my thighs would just ache and get really super weak. So I felt like I couldn't hold myself up that way. So I ended up on my back, holding my legs up next to my ears. And I do remember asking, how long would this take? Oh, and before that, they had said, oh, his heart rate is going down a little bit in contractions. And I do remember having the thought, I didn't vocalize this to anybody, but I thought, oh, maybe they'll give me a C-section because I was like, oh, this is worse than I thought it would be.
Uh-huh.
So maybe I'll get out of it. But obviously, I didn't really want a C-section. I was just in the moment thinking, I don't know if I can do it.
Right, which sounds very much like a transition thought.
Right.
Yeah. And you kind of hear yourself doing it and go like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want that, but, and I asked, how long does this stage usually take? And they said anywhere from 30 minutes to 3 hours. So I remember thinking, oh, heck no, this is not going to take 3 hours. So I pushed so hard that I broke tons of blood vessels in my face. By the time it was over, it was just completely splotchy and like in the whites of my eyes. And so I was not pushing the way I should have been. I was pushing with my face, but not with my uterus, which is what needed to happen. So, but it did end up only being about 40 minutes of pushing, which still also for a first baby.
It is. Not, it's fast. Yeah.
At one point, the midwife did say, try not to push so much with your face.
That's really hard to do, though.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because it's, like you said before, it's your uterus that needs to do the pushing, and that's involuntary. You can't control your uterus.
Right.
So, a more coached pushing, which is super common, as, you know, this is what happened to you, is when you are with your abdominal muscles and the rest of your muscles trying to kind of squeeze that uterus from the outside, and that requires a lot more strength and emphasis and effort because it's coming from a different place.
Yeah. So, and especially never having done it before, you know, it's, you've got to figure out how to work with your body. And I did remember every contraction, even when I was in the tub, I would just, and I know a lot of women do visualizations like maybe a flower blooming or something like that. For me, it helps to try as hard as I can to envision the actual physical what is happening. So I would visualize my cervix opening and the baby coming down every time. And so I tried to do that when I was pushing, also just thinking about everything opening up and moving down. So that probably actually helped.
Absolutely. I mean, 40 minutes is quick.
Especially since I hadn't felt the urge to push, so I probably wasn't actually ready to.
Right.
So, yeah, the whole labor and birth was really smooth and great. And, you know, they're pretty hands-off and just let me do my thing. The hard part for me comes afterwards. So I had my son and I had him on my chest and we were trying to get him to nurse and stuff. So I got skin to skin right away. But then I didn't have any more contractions and they were worried about it for the placenta coming. So I think she did some cord traction and then had me pushing to get the placenta out, and then it came, but it wasn't complete. So I had some retained placenta. So she called in an OB and had him just massage my abdomen, which is so painful.
The word massage for that right. needs to be yeah. changed, because there's right. nothing.
Dig in from yeah. the outside. With his
yeah.
hand. Yeah. So I remember really, this was probably the hardest part for me, because I, you know, you think I did it. I had my baby. Stop messing with me. Kind of like, leave me alone. I did the thing that I came here to do. And you don't really hear about the third stage very much from people. You don't think about it, especially a traumatic one. So I just remember holding him and being in such pain and thinking, I'm not supposed to care about this pain. Like, you hear all the stories about, oh, and all of it went away once I had my baby, and I just was so in love right away. And I thought, I am not in love with this baby. I don't know him. I do care about this pain. Like, this is all that I can think of right now. And I remember feeling so guilty already about that, about not feeling what I was supposed to be feeling at the time. And I did have to have someone hold him. I had my husband hold him. And then they went and did like his weight and everything, because I just couldn't hang on to him with all that was going on with me. I ended up bleeding quite a bit, and they didn't have to manually remove the placenta this time. But my mom had just gone out to tell my in-laws that the baby was born, and she came in, and I could see on her face that like something was shocking to her because of all of the blood. But I couldn't see the blood. I didn't realize how much it was. And then she just came up by my face and was talking to me and being really calm. Like, she got herself under control so that it didn't scare me too much. But at the end, I could see after it was all over, and they gave me a shot of Pitocin in my thigh. They gave me Misoprostol, they gave me Methergen, and then they gave me an IV of Pitocin to get it to stop. And so once everything was under control and I saw how much blood there was, I was like, oh, that is scary, I guess. I didn't have to have a transfusion, but I did have IV iron afterwards, and I was very anemic. I think that for me was the biggest thing about that birth. I felt I was strong. I felt strong the whole time. I felt confident, except for that one little minute in transition where I thought maybe I don't have to do the rest of it. But just the emotions and me judging my own emotions at that point, right when he was born, I think it really colored the next few months of new parenthood for me, because I didn't express what I was feeling. And so there was no one to tell me, you know, that's normal. Of course you couldn't separate from the pain. It was a lot of pain. It was a scary thing that was happening. So I kept it all inside, and I did have a struggle with depression afterwards, just because I think physically I was very anemic, and that really makes it harder. And then emotionally, I was just thinking, I'm not doing it right. I don't love him enough.
Mm.
I'm supposed to be in love with him, and I don't even know him. And like, I didn't have that rush of joy that people talk about. And I know I'm not the only one who's felt that way, but it's not expressed.
Right, right. And did you have, was that a feeling that lasted through the first few weeks, or is it just that first immediate moment?
It probably lasted about 8 weeks. Yeah. And I also did too much afterwards. Yeah. I had a hard time. I went a week postpartum. I came up to my parents' house for Mother's Day, and it was like a big family thing. And looking back, I'm like, I should have not been going anywhere or doing anything. I was exhausted just from having a baby, and I was anemic, which makes it worse. And then I was doing way too much and making it much harder for myself physically. So
on top of the emotional turmoil that you were feeling inside.
Right. And not telling anybody about. Mm-hmm. So I remember after that Mother's Day, we came home and I just, well, the whole day I had just been dreading because I was like, I'm so tired and my day is not going to end. My day never ends because he's going to be up
right
all night. And so I came home and I just remember just weeping in bed with him on my chest and just crying so hard because I knew that I wasn't going to sleep. And yeah. So tell people how you're feeling.
So tough, Megan. Oh, well, I want to give you a hug, a retroactive hug.
Thanks. But so, yeah, it was, I think it had a lot to do with not knowing what to expect in the third stage and then having it be kind of a traumatic experience and then judging my own emotions. So that was the biggest thing I learned from that birth is just, you know, feel what you're feeling and don't try to compare yourself with how you think other people are feeling because you never actually know. And don't judge your own emotions.
Yeah. And it's okay to feel all those emotions.
Right.
We don't love everybody all the time. We don't love our parents all the time. We don't love ourselves all the time. Like there's nothing we love all the time.
Right.
And so the same is okay for our kids, you know. We love them, but they're also sometimes little assholes that are keeping up all night.
Right. And they're new. I mean, a newborn is just, it's a new person. You've had them in your womb for 9 months, but it's still, you still are just meeting them and, you know. It's different.
And with a full-on personality that you can't quite decipher because you're figuring out what those cries mean and what those facial expressions mean and what's normal for a newborn, which is very different from what a child does or an adult does.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's number one.
So that's number one. Whew. Yum, delicious, tasty, super clean water. That is what we now happily drink, thanks to our AquaTrue Reverse Osmosis Water Purifier. It's just so much easier for us to stay hydrated. For me, that is vital because I am prone to getting headaches, and so being well hydrated really helps with that. And if you're pregnant or nursing, being well hydrated is also vital for you because good hydration is key during this time of life. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process that removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity under-sink options. They even have a Wi-Fi connected purifier and mineral boost options. Also, their filters are affordable and long-lasting with just one set of filters from their classic purifier, making the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. Using AquaTrue water can even improve the taste of your coffee, tea, and anywhere else you use water to cook, like for making rice, quinoa, stocks, or soups. I truly can't say enough good things about my AquaTrue. AquaTrue also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. Today, my listeners receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to aquatrue.com, that's AquaTrue.com, and enter code BIRTHFUL at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to aquatrue.com and use the promo code BIRTHFUL. Tell me if this sounds familiar. You've taken gorgeous photos of your baby or your kids, and then when you want to share them, it is a pain either trying to find the photos or figuring out the group text that they should go to, and then also remembering that, say, Aunt Helen only does email, so you need to send her image separately. Or like in my case, where my husband is a photographer who takes magnificent photos that I rarely actually get to see because they live on his phone or end up scattered in text messages that I can't easily find. Enter the Family Album app, which was created to give parents a secure and easy way to share photos and videos with your loved ones. Basically, it's a personal space for your family's memories without third-party ads or unwanted eyes, and with a bunch of fabulous features. It automatically sorts photos and videos by month, allowing you to swipe back in time and easily see how your child has grown. And you can also order 8 photo prints every month to be delivered to your home. The Family Album app also has unlimited storage. Plus, it's totally free. Yup, no more worrying about running out of space or being bombarded by third-party ads. So, to all the parents out there still trying to use other messaging apps for your kids' photos, level up your family photo game for free and securely with the Family Album photo sharing app. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, all in one word, and download the app to start creating your shared photo legacy. So, do you want to move on to number 2?
Sure. So, my oldest was he 7 months old when I found out I was pregnant with number 2. So, it was pretty quick afterwards. And it was on purpose. So, I always wanted all my kids to be close together.
Mm-hmm.
So, he was 16 months old when she was born. I remember taking him to get a smoothie and taking him to the park that day because I had just had an appointment and my midwife checked me. I don't remember how many centimeters I was, but I know that she stripped my membranes at that point. I was about 4 days before 40 weeks. So I was just kind of uncomfortable all day. So I thought, I'll just make this a good day with my oldest and just have a good last day because I kind of had a feeling.
You had that sense that that was going to be it.
Yeah. So I remember it was hot. It was August 29th in New Mexico. So it was very hot and we went to the park and I was very pregnant. And I remember being very uncomfortable, but trying to make it a good day for him. So I think around midnight, I started feeling real contractions. Not just kind of this crampy off feeling that I had been feeling all day. And again, they picked up pretty quickly. We went in probably around 4 a.m. again. And again, triage longer than I wanted it to be. But they checked me. I think I was about 5 centimeters. So it was progressing pretty quickly at home. And I remember one thing when they were walking us back to the labor room, I noticed that I was assigned a male nurse. And so I was a little bit like, am I going to be okay? Because I pretty much labor naked. Like, I just don't care. I'm not going to be bothered by a hospital gown when I'm in that state. So it took about the walk to the room and then I said, nope, I don't care. So I took off the hospital gown. I was like, he's a labor and delivery nurse. He knows what's going on. So I got in the tub right away again. And we had talked about my hemorrhaging possibility. So we had a plan in place. They put a HepLock in right away. They didn't make me have an IV, but just a HepLock so they could put it in if I needed Pitocin at the end. And pretty much the same thing. I just stayed in the tub with my husband until I did start feeling an urge to push. And so I had my husband call the midwife in to check me. And she said I was at 6. And I got pretty discouraged because I was like, oh my gosh, I'm only 6 and I really feel like I'm ready to have this baby.
Was the baby lower in your pelvis? Do you know?
She was, yeah. And ever since my first, I have carried them, you know, between my knees for the last couple weeks. So that's another reason I think that they are pretty fast because they're just there, mm-hmm. ready. But, you know, my mom reminded me, she said, 6 is really close. 6 could be in half an hour. You know, you could move really fast from here. And she said, if you feel like pushing a little bit in the water, she said, you don't have to tell the midwife, but you can give a little bit of a push at each contraction if that's what your body's doing. So I did. Just not like big trying to bring the baby out pushes, but I just kind of let my body do what it was going to do for each contraction. And then it probably was about half an hour, 45 minutes later, I asked to check me again because I was really feeling a lot of pressure. And then I was complete. So they let me, quote, air quotes.
Hear it.
Yeah. So I got up on the bed again, just because that felt right for me. So I did. Mm-hmm. And I think it was probably about 2 official pushes and she was out. And she was actually born in call. So she had not completely, but she had it a little bit on her head. So my water broke as she was coming out.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So that was cool. And I got her right on my chest again. And they right away, they gave me all of the drugs to prevent hemorrhaging. But I did retain part of the placenta again with her. And they did actually have to manually remove it. So that without any pain medication was not the most fun thing. To have an arm up there.
Saying that is not the most fun thing is like is understating the situation, Megan.
Yeah. No, yeah. To have someone's arm up to their forearm up inside you after you just had a baby is pretty terrible.
There you go.
But I did get to have her skin to skin right away. And I think knowing what to expect kind of made it a lot easier for me. And just having more grace for myself, mm-hmm. helped a lot. And the fact that they got it under control so quickly really helped. I wasn't anemic with her. I remember feeling like, you know, with my first, I stood up and I felt like my whole butt was going to fall off, like when I was standing up. But with her, I was up and kind of walking around a little bit. So yeah, after her, it was a lot easier. And I think the thing that I learned with her was just have grace for yourself. And, you know, I had prepared myself for 45 minutes of pushing with her. And then there she was right away. So that was nice. Her birth was probably, hers and my fourth were probably the easiest ones. Hers was about 8 hours start to finish too. So not bad.
Mm-mm. And that is such a great lesson or thing to keep in mind of having more grace with yourself. Because we do put rather high levels of expectation on ourselves.
Yeah.
Of what should be. And unfortunately, that just makes it harder. Like, we're making it harder for ourselves.
Right.
So that's a great lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, 3?
Yeah. Yeah.
Number 3?
Go for 3.
So my second and third are 18 months apart. So I gave myself a little more time. And the third, the whole pregnancy was just hard. We were in the process of transitioning from my husband working at a engineering lab here in Albuquerque, which he hated, to moving to be a full-time musician. At the time, it was a huge financial loss and it was a huge gamble for our family. And I was pregnant with our third child. And so...
And you were caring for two other ones who were...
Very young.
Very young.
Yes. So we had three under three for 2 months. So it was a lot.
Yeah.
yeah. But so when we moved while I was pregnant, my husband was on, went on 2 month long tours as a musician when I was pregnant. So it was just a lot. I remember telling my sister a few months before, I just said, I'm not excited about this baby. I said, I know that when he comes, I will love him and he will be great, but I don't want him right now. Which was a hard thing to say out loud. But, you know, so I think that the only reason I talk about that is because I think it had a big impact on my labor. So I've been later with each child. My first was a week early. My second was about 4 days early. And then my third was 40 weeks, 4 days. I don't want to say late because it wasn't late.
I like that.
So I had been checked about 2 weeks before he was born and I was at 4 centimeters. So I was like, okay, we're ready to go. And every night I would start having contractions and they were enough to wake me up. And then I would get up and I'd take a bath and everything would stop for about 2 weeks. We ended up selling our house officially, signing the papers the day after his due date. So I think that my body was just kind of like, we are not ready to bring this baby yet because there's too much stress going on. And another night, I started having contractions and then I got up and took a bath like I usually did and it didn't slow down and it intensified. So we decided we had moved out into the mountains right outside of Albuquerque. So we were about 30, 40 minutes away from the hospital. So we left a little bit earlier than we thought maybe we should. But also I was like, okay, I'm at 4 centimeters already and this is my third baby, so I should just go. He ended up being the longest labor of all of my kids. And I think it really had a lot to do with my emotional state. So we went to the hospital. I was there in triage forever. And then I tried to get right in the tub like I had with my first two because that's what worked. And every time I got in the tub, things would slow way down. I'd go back to like 7 to 10 minutes apart for my contractions. So I had to be walking the halls the whole time in order to keep things going. And I did, you know, I tried some nipple stimulation and stuff and it made a contraction happen, but nothing stuck. And I really wanted to have him that day because my midwife who had taken care of me for my prenatals for all three of them was on call that day. So I wanted her. So I felt the time crunch, even though, you know, there wasn't really one. And I remember once I was hanging on my husband's neck out right outside of the labor room and my midwife came out to check on me and I was just crying, just sobbing. And she asked what was wrong and so many people had commented, the midwives, nurses, even my mom had commented about my first two labors about how quiet and calm and peaceful I was. And so I took that as, okay, that's my ideal. That's how I'm supposed to be. And I was not being quiet with my third and I was crying and I was beside myself. So my midwife asked me what was wrong and I just said, I'm just not living up to my reputation. I'm embarrassed. And she just stifled a chuckle at that. And then she said, the only thing you have to do is birth a baby. You don't have to meet anybody's expectations. You are not doing anything wrong. This is how this labor is for you. So that gave me a little bit of encouragement and freedom, but then I still had in the back of my mind, I'm not excited for this baby. I don't want another baby right now. So that was a hard thing to have in my mind while my body was trying to birth the baby. It was not compatible. So eventually I got to probably about 6 or 7, and I remember being in the labor room and just breaking down. I was sitting on a birthing ball, and I just said it out loud for the first time, to even to my husband. I hadn't expressed that to him. I had only said it to my sister. So to the whole room, the nurses and the midwife and my mom and my husband, I just said, I don't want this baby. I am not excited to have this baby. And I can't handle the two that I have. My oldest was 2, so he was acting like a 2-year-old. And I was feeling overwhelmed and underwater with all of that. And I just cried really, really hard. And then I felt like, okay, I can do this now. I told everyone how I feel, and I got a lot of tears out, and I can do it. And then I think right after that, I threw up. So I was like, okay, we're getting towards the end, because I knew that that's what happened with me. And then my midwife checked me and she said, you're 8 and I can break your waters if you want now. And I was just, you know, I had learned more about birth since then. I had decided that I wanted to eventually become a doula. So I'd been doing some reading and stuff. And I had in my head, well, we should just let it happen when it happens. But I also was done. So I said, okay, you can break my waters. And she did. And then it was about 10 minutes that I got to 9.5. And then I just started pushing. I didn't wait for that last half centimeter because I just decided. I didn't tell anyone.
I was going to get out of the way.
Yeah. So, and the pushing stage, I don't remember how long it took. It wasn't long enough to remember. He was out pretty quickly. He was big. He was 8 pounds, 9 ounces, which is bigger than my others were, right in the 7-pound range.
Go through all three of them on how big they were.
My first was 7.8. My second was 7.4, and he was 8.9.
Okay.
A 1-pound jump was a pretty big jump. So yeah, he was born, and then my placenta came and it was complete and I didn't retain any. So my midwife, I think she thought, okay, that's the problem. That's why she bleeds, because she retains placenta. So she actually didn't do any of the medications that we had done before. And I had him on my chest for about an hour. He nursed for about an hour, latched right away, and it was really great. And, you know, and I did have that feeling that, oh, I love him so much, which was such a blessing after having such a difficult pregnancy emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really this rush of joy, and he's here and I love him, and thank you that I love him. So it was really great. And then I thought, you know, I'm good. I had my whole placenta was delivered and we're good. So I got up to use the bathroom so that I could be moved to the recovery room. And the nurse was like, okay, she's fine, and didn't come in with me. But my mom was not confident that I was okay, which I'm glad about, because I went in, I got on the bathroom and on the toilet, and I passed a huge clot, and then I passed out. And my mom caught me, because I would have fallen right on my face if she hadn't come in with me. So, and then I bled a lot more than I had with my first. So then they did the Pitocin and all of that stuff. And then even a few hours later, when we were in recovery, I passed another, like, probably mouse size clot. And so I called them, and then they checked and they were like, yeah, you're still bleeding a lot. And she did have to go in manually and grab a bunch of clots out at that point too. And they did give me morphine for that, but it still was really, really painful.
Ugh. I can't imagine. Yeah.
So that was the third one. So I think that I mean, I just learned a lot about how much your mind and your emotions can affect your body. And if they're not in the same place, it's just not going to work the way it's supposed to. So I wanted to be done with the labor, but I wasn't ready to have the baby, and that wasn't going to happen. I couldn't not have the baby and be done with the labor at the same time. So I had to figure that out before my body was going to let me.
Mm-hmm. And I find that, you know, like the first ones, it's about all the hurdle of usually, and I'm going to make generalizations here, so keep that in mind. Yeah. But, you know, the first ones, you're dealing a lot more with the physical aspect of never having felt mm-hmm. a baby try to come out from you and what contractions feel like and all of that stuff, right? So the focus tends to be more on that. And then second ones, because you have an idea of what needs to happen, quote unquote, right? Mm-hmm. Then you're like, it's less exciting of, oh, well, there's a contraction, and we got to time it, and should we go now? And da, 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 da. You know, it's going right. to take a lot longer. So then you're like, oh, yeah, oh, this is still not bad. This is not. And I think it kind of sneaks around you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find second babies tend to come quicker because we're just not paying attention to them as much. You know, like,
yeah, you're not just taking it seriously.
And you're kind of ignoring it because you think, well, this is not that bad yet. And yeah. so your mind, you are out of the way so that primal brain can do its thing. And then all the hormones flow and it flushes and you have a baby quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And then third babies, you've gone through all that with the physical. So it's like you've graduated from the physical. But then I find the third babies are a mind game.
Mm-hmm.
The pregnancies yeah. tend to be different. Each one asks a different level of, I don't know, transition or change in yourself, or it's mm-hmm. not necessarily asking something physical of you, but asking some, when I say you, it's more of that you're as a person, as a soul, as an entity, as a, you know, those big questions of why am I here and mm-hmm. and what does this all mean? Like it asks you to face bigger stuff.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I find that often that the third babies become a mind game. And you're describing it so interestingly of it's not about birthing with your body at that point. It's about birthing at a different level.
Yeah. It was almost like my body was saying, yes, I can do this, but you've got to get your head figured out first before I'm going to let this baby go. Because I knew that my body could do it. I knew that I could just let it birth my baby, that I could be confident in my body, but it was my mind and my emotions that needed to get on board before my body would let it happen.
And also a different question, but you did experience some postpartum depression after your first one.
Yes.
There is a general higher incidence of having postpartum depression again after you've had it. Do you think that came into play during this pregnancy and with the feelings that you were having? I mean, because you had quite a bit of triggers going on for postpartum depression that you seem to be having, you know, sleep deprivation. You had two little kids. Aside mm-hmm. from being pregnant and uncomfortable and all that. So I'm sure you weren't getting that much sleep.
Right.
Then you had financial stress, which is a mm-hmm. trigger. Then you were moving, which is yeah. another trigger. Like you were stacking them up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was worried about that. I was afraid that that was going to happen because of all of that and because of my experience with my first. But I'm a spiritual person. So I really think it was the grace of God that protected me from that at the end. I think I probably was experiencing some prenatal depression. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be how I would describe how I was feeling before. But just my general default emotion is guilt. So the fact that I didn't feel after he was born, I didn't feel a bunch of guilt about how I had been feeling when I was pregnant. I just felt grateful. I just felt gratitude for him and the fact that I was able to feel all the things that I had missed out on feeling with my first and throughout my pregnancy. I just felt grateful. So I didn't let myself feel guilty about the past. I let myself feel grateful for what was happening right then, which was pretty huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And that you had those feelings of that skin to skin first hour, that you were able to have that surge of, I love you. And that's beautiful. I'm glad you had that.
Me too.
Yeah. So then did you have to have a transfusion because of this more bleeding, or were you anemic as well?
They gave me IV iron again. And then I had, you know, I had to take iron when I went home. No, I haven't ever had to have a transfusion, thankfully. But I think I'm just like right on the edge of that line.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely anemic after him, but it wasn't as bad as my first. Either it wasn't as bad or I knew what was going on. So I don't know if it was just like, okay, this is how I feel after I bleed a lot. Instead of what is happening? Why can't I do what I want to do?
Were you more gentle to yourself during that postpartum period?
I think I was, but at the same time, I had two other kids.
Right.
So I was as gentle as I was able to be. Yeah. So that was number three.
So then number four.
Number four, I gave myself a nice long break with number four because these two are 26 months apart. So
look at you.
A whole 2 years, more than 2 years. I did experience a miscarriage in between my third and fourth. So
I'm so sorry.
Oh, thank you. It's never okay, but it's okay.
Right. But I am sorry.
Thank you. So we got pregnant with our fourth live baby very soon after the miscarriage. The midwives told me to wait, and I said, if my body can get pregnant again, it will. So I didn't listen to them, which I'm not advising. I'm just saying that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And the pregnancy was great with him. They did scare me a little bit because they said on the ultrasound that he had a 2-vessel umbilical cord instead of a 3. And they said that sometimes that can mean nothing. Sometimes it can mean a small baby. Sometimes it can mean all of the worst things you've ever imagined, of course, which sometimes I wish they would just not give me that information. If they're not going to be able to give me a concrete thing of what it means, then just don't make me worried.
Right.
But it ended up fine. It ended up not meaning anything. So I was at a freestanding birth center with my fourth.
What made you switch from hospital to birth center?
It was insurance, mostly. Because of the career change, we had change of insurance, and my former midwife wasn't covered anymore, and then this birth center was actually super cheap. So I really didn't have a negative feeling about hospital birth, besides really the triage is what I wanted to skip. Because it's just not any fun. But, you know, that they were very respectful with my first three births of what I wanted, and very hands off, and I was able to do what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, each child has been later and later. So I was 40 weeks, 6 days, and I knew, so that was a Saturday. I knew that I was going to have an appointment on Monday, and they were going to have to start talking about induction methods, because in our state, you're not allowed to have a birth center birth past 42 weeks. So I wasn't worried about going to 42 weeks. I knew that he would come when he was going to come, but I didn't want to have to be induced, and I didn't want to have a hospital birth when I had been planning on not having a hospital birth. So I did go to an acupuncturist that morning of 40 weeks, 6 days. And I had a couple of contractions sitting there with needles. So I thought, okay, maybe this is working. And then after that, I was just like feeling more and more pressure, not necessarily contractions, but just pressure and uncomfortable. And then I was making dinner for my kids at about 6 o'clock and really started feeling like, okay, these are real contractions. So while I was putting them to bed, I talked to them and I said, I might not be here in the morning. You know, your grandpa's going to be here and he'll take care of you because I might be going to have the baby. So I just made sure to explain to them and have as dedicated and peaceful a bedtime I could while I was having contractions. And then I went upstairs and cleaned up the playroom.
Of course you did.
Because people were going to be at my house, even though it was my family. So I'm crawling around, putting toys away and pausing every once in a while. And my husband's asking me, do you really need to be doing that right now? I said, yes, I do. And then I took a bath and things didn't slow down. And I gave my husband instructions and I leaned on the counter and he made me like a coconut water, honey, lemon juice, sea salt drink to have electrolytes during labor. And then I called the midwife and I said, you know, this is what's happening. And she said, okay, well, there's someone else here laboring right now. You come when you're ready, because they knew. They just said, you know when you need to come because this is number 4 and you know what you're doing. So I said, okay. And I got in bed and we were in the middle of watching Friends, the whole series on Netflix. I just remember we were watching Friends. My contractions were slowing down when I was in bed, but they were still very intense. So they were probably getting more intense, but further apart. And then I got up to go to the bathroom and there was pink. So I had a little show. And so I said, okay, we should go because we were still 40 minutes away from the birth center. So I thought it would be a good idea to go. So we actually live on my parents' property. So I just called my dad and he just came over. So it wasn't like we had to wait 30 minutes for him to get there and then go. So we left and my water broke about maybe 20 minutes into the drive, which is also not fun.
Did you have anything down on the seats?
No.
Random doula question.
No, I didn't. Because I didn't. So they did give us when we were leaving the birth center, they gave us some Chucks pads so I didn't have to sit on a wet seat. But so, yeah, we got there. They checked me and I was at 4 centimeters. But my waters had broken and then I immediately felt nauseous and I got in the tub when it filled up. And my midwife, I think she just didn't realize how quickly things were happening because I was only at 4 when I got there. And so she was just kind of chatting and talking a lot and I was just getting so annoyed. And she had the mother who was there before me had been transferred. And so she was texting the other midwife to kind of touch base of what was going on. And she had all her sounds on her phone. And so it's just like tick, 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 while she's texting and my contractions are getting closer and closer and closer. And I was just like, please turn off your phone. I was pretty grouchy with this birth, but I didn't care because I just knew what I needed.
Yeah.
And I needed her to be quiet. And I I had decided before, I just said to myself, I'm going to be as loud as I need to be. I'm going to keep my jaw open, a la Ina May Gaskin sphincter law. I'm going to keep everything open and make whatever sounds I need to make and people can deal with it. So she kept talking to me and she was like, okay, I want to make sure that you have something to drink. Do you want some chocolate milk? Do you want some apple juice? Do you want something? And I'm like, no, I have something to drink. And she said, well, I just want to make sure you have something with calories. And then she and my mom are talking. She's like, my mom's like, I don't think that I brought anything with calories. And husband is just kind of trying to focus on me. And in between contractions, I just said, I have calories. And because I had made my electrolyte drink. And so then everyone kind of laughed and shut up. So she had just finished telling me, you know, make sure you drink something every hour. And then she went out of the room and I said, I'm pushing. And this was 40 minutes after we arrived and I was at 4 centimeters. And I wasn't trying to push. It was just, I was just pushing. And then my husband caught him. He stuck his hands in the water and caught him because she didn't get in there yet. She didn't realize that I'm pushing meant I'm crowning.
And right. That, I mean, baby's here and out any yeah, minute.
Here,
right.
Yeah. Here he is. So my husband actually stuck his hands in the water and caught him, which he's a little bit of a squeamish guy. So he just did what he had to do. But yeah, so 40 minutes from arrival, there was my baby.
Yeah.
And I could physically feel him getting lower. I could physically feel my cervix dilating. I could feel him getting lower and lower each contraction. So I knew probably once I hit the water, I was probably already close to transition because I just was letting myself open up and I was relaxed and there he was.
You had the focus on the right thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sitting here listening to you smiling. I'm like, yeah, that's so good.
So yeah, and I did, they gave me the shot right away. They did all of the active management. I still bled more than my midwife wanted me to. She did have to reach in and get clots out again. And she said, well, I just don't understand why this is happening. And I said, I do. This is just what happens. This is what happens with me. And so I was able to not be freaked out about it by number 4 because I was like, it'll be okay. The drugs will work. I will be okay. And I was. And I got to have him skin to skin for most of the time. And we stayed at the birth center for probably 3 hours. And then, you know, you go home. But we didn't go home. We actually went to a hotel for a few days, just the three of us, because I knew that having a 5, 3, and 2-year-old, I was not going to get a lot of rest.
Right.
So I was making sure that I had some. So we went and stayed in a hotel for just a few days and just, you know, get to know my new one and have some time with just him.
That sounds lovely.
So yeah, it was really good.
That's a fantastic journey. What was it that you learned with the fourth?
I think it carries over from the third of, you know, being kind of really worried about living up to my reputation, whatever that means, and being quiet and being calm. And then with the fourth, I was just like, no, if I need to yell and scream, I'll yell and scream. If I need to tell people to be quiet, I'll tell them to be quiet. I'm going to make it what I need it to be. I'm going to make the environment be the way that I need it to be in order for me to have this baby. So I think just a lot of freedom in that fourth birth. I was giving myself the freedom to vocalize and do what I needed to do in the moment. And I was not judging myself and not letting my perceived judgments of other people bother me, which I'm sure people never were judging me in the first place. But, you know, it's just projected.
Yeah. And I think you always think you're louder than you are.
Yeah. I did have a birth photographer for my fourth because I knew that it was going to be my last baby. So I wanted to really, you know, have all the things I wanted. So she was also a doula. And she said, right after he came out, she said, I knew you were pushing. She's like, I knew you were in transition from the sounds you were making before. But she's like, I didn't have my doula hat on right then. So I didn't say anything.
Right.
She had her photographer hat on.
Well, and you clearly by this point had no problem advocating for yourself and just letting things know.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you want to add?
What I've been really kind of passionate about lately is letting moms know to have grace for themselves in pregnancy and labor and birth and postpartum, especially in our silly bounce back culture that we have. And we're not made to be bouncy after having a human being. So just, it was really great to give myself kind of a guilt-free couple of days, knowing that my other kids were fine. They were having fun with their grandparents and they were fine. And I could just get to know my baby. And I probably the very best parenting advice that I ever got was from my sister with my fourth baby. She just said, look at your baby while he's nursing. And just look at him. You know, don't look at your phone. Don't look at your computer. Just look at his face and get to know him and really soak it in. And I still think about that when I'm tempted to try to, you know, get something done while he's nursing. I just remember, look at your baby. Just be in this moment with him right now. And it helps me with all of my children.
Do you find with this fourth one, did any of your depression symptoms show up or come back? Or was that not an issue this time?
It was not an issue. I did have my placenta encapsulated this time. I feel like I'm getting more and more crunchy every baby.
Well, you know.
As I'm learning more too. And I really feel like that helped. I know it's not, you know, for everybody. Everyone's placenta is different too. So who knows what's actually in it. But I feel like that helped for me. I did feel a lot better afterwards. And so I might have, once I got home, started doing a little too much. And so like the first 2 weeks, I felt awesome. And I was just happy and really on a high. And then after that, I was like, okay, wait a second. I remember feeling at 6 weeks, I felt like, oh no, now I don't have an excuse. So like I started doing things too soon. And now if I feel tired or if I feel overwhelmed, I'm not going to have that just had a baby card to play because people are going to see, you know, she's fine. She's doing this. She's been doing laundry for weeks. Why should she have an out now? So I remember feeling like kind of a panic, like, oh no, I've tricked them. And now I can't go back and rest. But that's also not true. You can do whatever you need to do at any stage.
Absolutely. So, plus you've got four little ones to make you tired. Like seriously. Thank you so, so much for sharing all your stories. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was the wonderful Megan Othling, who is a doula and writer from Albuquerque, New Mexico, where she lives with her husband, four children, two dogs, a rabbit, a snake, and a gecko. Megan is passionate about supporting and advocating for birthing and postpartum people, and you can connect with her on Instagram at Megan Othling Doula, and Othling is O-T-H-L-I-N-G. Also, you can connect with us at Birthful Podcast. In fact, if you're not driving, it would be just lovely if you would take a screenshot of this episode right now and post it to your stories, sharing your biggest takeaway from the episode. Make sure to tag at Birthful Podcast so we can see it and amplify it. You can find the in-depth show notes and transcript of this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about my birth and postpartum preparation classes and download your free postpartum preparation plan. Also, if you are finding that this podcast is your go-to resource for birth and postpartum preparation, then the best way to support us is by taking any one of my perinatal classes, doing one of my doula workshops, or trying out some of the fantastic products made by our sponsors. This is what allows us to continue doing this work. Birthful is created and produced by me, Adriana Lozada, with production assistance from Asia Plati. Thank you so very much for listening to and sharing Birthful. Be sure to follow us on GoodPod, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and everywhere you listen. And then come back for more ways to inform your intuition.